You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 16th of October 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Yes, the weekend is almost here. We've got that Friday feeling, and you know what that means? It means we have Grandpa Lemshade with us today. Grandpa, how you doing, sir?
I'm not even sure how to describe the Friday feeling anymore yet. It's just, we're always covering these clown world stories. We try to end the week with a little bit of humor. So I don't know. The Friday feeling seems to be an ambiguous sort of thing. You know, is it a light feeling? Is it just a just it's just I guess you would just have to, it's a honk honk feeling, you know, the clown horn feeling. It's just I don't know. Yeah. There it is. That's what I was waiting for. We're waiting for the clown horn. We're in the clown car, and we're wrapping up yet another week in clown world.
It's like waiting around for these stories. I mean, we've had a real dearth of clown world stories for the last couple of weeks, and just desperately looking for them. And suddenly, three of them come along at once. We've actually got three news stories to get into today. And the first one concerns the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, which has updated its definition of sexual preference to an offensive term just one day after Amy Coney Barrett's use of the phrase was slammed during her SCOTUS hearing. The reputable dictionary's fifth definition of the word preference cites orientation and uses the example of sexual preference. But on Wednesday, this definition was updated to explain that the use of preference in relation to sexuality is offensive. The change came hours after Democratic Senator Mazio Hirono said Barrett's appointment to the Supreme Court would pose a threat to LGBTQ rights and used the judge's use of the term sexual preference as evidence of this concern. Hirono said the phrase is highly offensive to the LGBTQ community and is used by anti-LGBTQ activists to suggest sexuality is a choice rather than an unchangeable part of an individual's identity. I find this just amazing that just because one person would complain about something, the dictionary changes the definition of it. I mean, this is just normal language. People say sexual preference or preference. What would you prefer, red wine or white wine, sir? It's just what do you prefer? It's not saying something is inbuilt or anything like that. And to think that they can just change the definition in the dictionary, which is supposed to be based around what we all understand the definition of words to be, to change it just because one person complained about it and said, oh no, this is now offensive, we can't have this. I mean, you can take offense at just about anything, literally anything anybody says. You can take offense at this whole culture that we have now of banning words, censoring things because we think they might offend somebody. You can't offend somebody. Somebody has to take offense. And really, we should be encouraging people not to take offense. We should be teaching people to have self-discipline, to understand that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. You can't make the whole world wrapped up in cotton wool so that it's never going to offend somebody, because there will always be something that people can find offense at. I'm offended, very offended, by the fact that they are just changing the definition of words like this. It's exactly like George Orwell's 1984. They're not just changing our history, they're changing our very language that we use in the hopes that if they change it, we won't actually be able to think of these concepts anymore. And this is such a harmless concept, sexual preference. I mean, this term has been in use for forever, really. What, they have a different sexual preference, or they have a different musical preference, or whatever. It's just logic that this is the sort of terminology that you would use. It does not mean that this woman is somehow a threat to LGBTQ people. And the fact that this dictionary has just jumped on the bandwagon and done this, it shows that the dictionary is political. It's not unbiased. It's not in the center there. It's not trying to find out the definition of words. It's just trying to be politically correct and get as many virtue points as possible, I think, and score them with the wokerati. But what are your thoughts on this first news story here, Grandpa?
Oh, the offense taking place here is the assault on the language. And this is the way they use this as to control any sort of discussion, any sort of conversation. I mean, just like these contentious hearings over this Supreme Court nominee. This is whipped out not to, like, you know, further any sort of discussion. It is to control the conversation. Oh, you said sexual preference. That means you're a bad thinker. You're an evil thinker. Now you have the dictionary run up and say, oh, we've got to change this. I mean, if your words don't have a understood meaning by everybody, then they have no meaning at all. And that's why they love doing this. I mean, it's virtually impossible to keep up with what's offensive today. I mean, words that were fine yesterday, now all of a sudden, you think about this, really, seriously, 2 weeks ago, if somebody said sexual preference, who cares? I mean, it's a shrug. Nobody even notices. But now it's officially an offensive term. It's been deemed you're not allowed to say these things as if they're harmful. And they do this too. They'll say, they'll classify certain words as like violence. These words are violence. These words are harmful. And we have to keep, that's why we have to be banned off of all social media, because these words are they could harm people and they don't feel safe. And it's all nonsensical. We know it's nonsensical, but they do it anyway. They use this to control the narrative. They use this to control any sort of debate, discussion. You can't have a debate. You can't discuss anything, because they keep narrowing the parameters of what words are allowed. Literal scientific words are not allowed. I mean, it never, you know, it's a control issue. And we read this story and it's stupid, and it is stupid. We all know it's stupid, but there is a much more insidious thing at work here. And that is this drive to control what people say. I mean, they can't control your thoughts, but when they can control what sort of words you're allowed to use and what is and isn't acceptable public discourse, then they literally can control what is was said in the public square. If you're somebody that's still allowed on social media now, does this officially mean that if you're on Twitter or Facebook and you make a post about sexual preferences, you can be banned because that's now an offensive term, an official offensive term, according to the dictionary? They're basically heading to a place where anything they don't want to hear is now considered an offensive term, and you can be shut down for it. It is stupid, but it's definitely a much more, shall I say, a dark force at work here with this drive to control what people are allowed to say. I always feel like sorry for the lefties, you know, because they themselves, you know, they're in the middle of it. I mean, people like us, we're on the outside. We're permanently offensive. We're deemed permanently offensive no matter what we say, no matter what we do, no matter how we try to present terms. We're going to be deemed offensive. We're going to be labeled regardless of how we package these things. But for the lefties, you know, they think they're in the in-group. They're in the middle of the swamp, and they themselves must have to constantly walk around worried that they might step on a landmine. Some good social do-gooder lefty on Facebook now is probably running around when reading this story and deleting any of their old posts where they might have inadvertently said sexual preference, because now they too could be turned on and deemed a bad thinker. It's just a never driving end. It never stops. And it's amazing when you look at these other issues that they constantly push and people still think it's going to stop. Remember when they said the homosexual marriage thing was they just wanted equality. They just wanted the homosexual marriage. And, they, you know, how quickly they moved on from that. And people still think that at some point they're going to stop. At some point they'll say, OK, we're done deeming words offensive. We're done with this. We're happy now. Of course, obviously, they're never going to be happy. So at some point in time, the people, you know, there has to be pushback over this.
One of the big problems with it is that it interferes with the accuracy of statements. Some of the words that they're trying to say are now offensive and you can't use are things like mulatto, quadroon, octoroon. And what are you going to use instead? I mean, you're stripping away people's identity with that. You're just going to call them all BIPOC or BAMI. That's not accurate, is it? It's not actually defining exactly what that person is. You have to use terms like mulatto, octoroon, or quadroon, because they are specific words that determine exactly what you are talking about. And we see an instance of this in the next article that we've got here, where they are actually using the wrong terminology, because otherwise they'd be tripping up over their sentences, I guess. They say a mixed race couple was left crushed when their Florida home was appraised for $135,000 more after they removed evidence that a black woman lived there. And what they actually mean is an interracial couple. A mixed race couple would be two mixed race people. It's an interracial couple. What they mean is one part of the couple is one race and the other part of the couple is another race. The other part of the couple happens to be a black woman. And what they have done is they removed the evidence that she lived there. So basically what they did, they tidied up. Abena and Alex Horton said that when they first had their four-bedroom house in Jacksonville valued, the appraiser told them it was only worth $330,000, which was considerably lower than the couple had expected. Suspecting that racism might be at play, the couple removed all family photos, all books by black authors from the house, and made sure that only Alex, who is white, was home for the second appraisal. Lo and behold, this time the appraiser assigned the value at $465,000, over 40% more than the previous estimate. Well, who would have guessed that actually tidying up your house and removing things that don't necessarily need to be there, cleaning the place up, would mean that you actually got a higher estimate? It doesn't mean that race was involved in this at all. There are laws to prevent race from being involved in this at all. And I would imagine that there was clothes left out, all sorts of stuff that had been left out that they actually tidied away here. So, of course, when the appraiser came the second time, he gave it a higher value. Also, what we're talking about here is a second opinion. It wasn't the same appraiser that came round. It was a second appraisal. And they would probably have a third one as well. And the whole idea of doing this is to then go with the highest one, isn't it? That's why you have three of them. I mean, this is a real nothing burger of a story. It's just an excuse to try and blame racism for something. And it really highlights the fact that if you are non-white, then you can blame racism for literally anything. And this is a good example of that, I think. And there are comments to this article which say that this really isn't telling the whole truth. And there's a lot that actually happened here that is not being reported on about just how much they actually tidied up the house in order to get this higher appraisal rating. But Grandpa, you must know more about this. I don't really know much about what these appraisals are and how the house selling goes on over there in America. So yeah, do tell us what you think of this article.
Well, I mean, you get two different people come in and appraise the house and you've got two different results. So they, of course, jump to the conclusion that it has to be the racism. The first appraiser came in and gave a low ball. Now, let's think about this. What they were doing here on the appraisal, my understanding, is they were trying to get a second mortgage. So what people do is they'll take their house. Say you own your house and you want a big pocket full of money to go buy a boat, take an expensive vacation. So you'll go to the bank and you'll take out another mortgage on your house as collateral, so that you can, you know, party hard, pretend that you have money that you don't really have. I mean, now your house isn't paid for. And, you know, so they were doing this. Well, you think about it, the appraiser is essentially, even though you're paying for the appraisal, I mean, the bank, it's in their interest for a lowball offer. I mean, so an appraiser that can say, $135,000, if they would have jumped on this and let's say the house is worth $330,000, well, you know, the bank is not worried about, you know, they're not in the negative. If they wound up having to foreclose on the house for some reason down the road, then they're sitting pretty versus, okay, if your appraiser comes in and says the house worth $200,000, but the house is only worth $100,000. Well, the bank goes with the $200,000 and then 6 months later has to foreclose on the house. They're looking at something they've got to unload at a loss because it's not really worth that, or they've got to fix it up. The notion, I mean, if you've ever traded a car in, if you've ever gone and traded a car and you go and you think you have all these people and they always think, well, my car cars worth $5,000, and they go to trade it in, and the guys look at it and say, great news, I got a great appraisal on your car. We can give you $1,500 for your car right now. And then people get all offended because they were convinced their car was worth $5,000, but their car was worth $5,000 if they sold it privately. The car lot's trying to make their money, so they're going to offer you $1,500. Well, you might go to another car lot, and they're also looking at, they can sell the car for $5,000, but they might offer you $2,500. So you got this huge difference percentage-wise in the appraisal value. It's just a matter of their opinion and what they want to make on it and things such as this. And of course, like you said, I'm sure they did more than just simply put the books away. That's nonsensical. I cannot picture a world where any appraiser would go in and do his job and based look around and go, oh, well, there's a book here by a black author. That's a big negative. I mean, it's absurd on its face. I don't even understand how they can treat these stories seriously. I mean, it's just not, they brought in two different appraisers. They changed the house up. They're admitting they changed the house up. And as you said, I'm sure they tidied up, did other things that they're not telling in the story, but they brought a second person in who came to a different conclusion, a different number. This is not this huge, like, scandalous thing that never happens. I mean, this sort of thing happens all the time. You get a second appraiser. Like you said, you might bring three appraisers in, and you're going to go with the highest one so that you can go to the mortgage company, the lending company, and say, well, we had the house appraised. It's at this much. And most of the time, the lending company might turn around. You go get your own appraisal. You come in and say, well, I brought an appraiser in. This appraiser says house worth $400,000. And the bank may very well tell you, well, that's well and good, but we're sending our appraiser in, and because they want to be sure. Again, they want to be sure they're not looking at negative equity here. So they might send their appraiser in, and what, their appraiser looks at it and says, no, it ain't worth $400,000. It's worth $250,000. Was that racism? Well, no, it's just, this is the way these things work. And the breathtaking thing to me here is this entire story is international news. I mean, it's in the Daily Mail. It's international news that something that no doubt happens to people of every race every single day, but suddenly it's an international news story because they hang the term racism on it.
Well, there's another side to this as well, I think. I mean, if they're going to mark it down and say it was because they saw books by black authors and they realized that the woman there was black, well, if they had actually marked it down because of that, then there would have been a good reason for that. And it probably was because if they look at the demographics of the people that are not likely to pay the loans back, possibly, and they might see that actually blacks are overrepresented in people that aren't likely to pay the loans back, which would mean that they would give less of a value on the house. It's the same with insurance, with women, they had actually had different insurance premiums a while back, and the insurance companies were taken to court over it. But the reason why the women had these different insurance premiums is because they have a totally different profile to men, particularly young men that are likely to race their cars and soup their cars up, and they're more likely to have accidents, basically, young men are, rather than young women. And it's basically when we have these are things which are called stereotypes, there are reasons for that. They are reasons for that because we've actually had experiences within our lives that bear out these stereotypes. And particularly in areas like insurance and areas like appraisal, they'll be looking for these little signs that tell them whether somebody is going to pay back the loan or not, and whether you fit in a certain category. It also goes on what area of the town that you live in, because whether there's more crime in it or whether there's less crime in it, whether it's a middle class area, whether it's a low class area. I mean, it's all about pattern recognition and prediction. And particularly when you're involved in business, you want to be making the best business decisions. And all of this anti-racist stuff that they're pushing out there must really be affecting business badly, I would have thought, especially with the diversity quotas that they're being told that they have to have, and that diversity is a wonderful thing. Well, diversity of thought might be a good thing, but just diversity for the sake of having different races, that's not going to be a good thing. And I would suggest that what was going on here is that this guy was just doing his job. And it is shocking that it makes international news, and it just highlights the fact that anything that attacks white people and makes white people out to be terrible, terrible racists is going to get in the news. You're not going to read anything about how wonderful white people are. You're only going to hear about that at Radio Albion. Well, we've got another news story here, and this is a really big one in the news at the moment for other reasons, really. It's to do with Hunter Biden and his computer and all the information on it, which is, it looks like it's going to be a huge scandal. The big news at the moment is that Twitter have censored all the tweets that that actually make mention of this, and they've actually censored the New York Post's Twitter account entirely. This is massive news that Facebook is doing it as well. Facebook and Twitter, both of them are meddling in the election here. They're holding back information from people that need to see it. And we've actually got some details on what went on here. And I found this particularly interesting because of one sentence that I will highlight. And again, this is from the Daily Mail. It says, in the 5 years before Hunter Biden dropped off his water-damaged computer for repairs, he had been discharged from the Navy for smoking cocaine, divorced his wife, who claimed he had spent all their money on drugs and prostitutes, moved in with his dead brother's wife, and impregnated a stripper. And that's all on top of an email already discovered that appears to show he introduced Joe Biden to a Ukrainian energy executive shortly before the then vice president pressured that country's government to fire a prosecutor who was investigating his company. Now more details of Hunter's wild life of sex and drugs could become public in the 3 weeks before his father Joe faces voters as he vies to replace Donald Trump as president of the United States. The owner of the computer shop where Hunter sent his MacBook Pro claims he tried to contact him to ask what he should do about the computer. But when he didn't hear back, he passed on its contents to the FBI and to a lawyer for Trump surrogate Rudy Giuliani. Because, of course, that's always what you do, isn't it? If you can't actually find the owner of the computer that they've brought in to get you to repair it, you contact the FBI or you contact a lawyer for Trump. I mean, I don't think this looks very good on actually the computer owner here, because that's not much of an excuse, is it? If you have a computer that isn't claimed, well, you just hand it over to a lawyer for Donald Trump. But apparently, it is believed the computer, which was dropped off in April 2019, goes back around 5 years, potentially containing emails and documents concerning Hunter's life from 2014, the year he was discharged from the Navy. And the really interesting thing here is April 2019, they've had this computer since then. I mean, what's that, a year and 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, a year and a half that they have actually had this? And this is only just coming out now. And I mean, you were saying to me earlier, Grandpa, you had some thoughts about what was really going on here. Do you want to go into some of them and comment on this?
Yeah, and I think there's a whole lot more here. When I, like you said at the top of the show, we're always just scavenging for something light and funny to talk about, and you know, I'm a really busy guy, so you know, I'm going through, like, yesterday. I sent these suggestions like yesterday, you know, and I'm like in a hurry, and I'm like, oh, you know, and I see Hunter Biden with a crack pipe in bed, you know, and I'm like, that's funny. Here, let's throw this one into the mix. But as this story is progressing, I think there's a whole lot more here, a whole lot more there than what appears at first glance, and I'll probably get into this even further on my show, on the next show on Tuesday. But yeah, no, you think about this. Let's think about this logically. You get a computer and you look at the hard drive and you find a picture of Hunter Biden laying in bed with a crack pipe in his mouth. You're not going to hand that over to the FBI. You're going to have, like, my initial reaction, lulz, you know, look at this fool. You know, so I really think there's a whole lot more going on. Another way to look at this is, say you're a regular normie computer guy and you get this laptop and you get into it and you find a picture of Hunter Biden with a crack pipe in his mouth and you say, hey, I want to hand this over to Rudy Giuliani. How successful are you going to be at that? I mean, just getting in contact with him. Hey, let me send an email. Hey, Rudy, it's me. And this guy, you have no idea who it is. And I've got pictures off this computer of Hunter Biden with a crack pipe in his mouth. You're not even going to get through. You're not going to even get out of the spam folder. That's how real life works. And yet Rudy Giuliani has this story. My hunch here, and this is just hunch, I have nothing to back this up. I think the computer guy is like a layer of protection, you know, a way of putting this out to where they don't have to disclose how they actually got it. I mean, did somebody close to Hunter Biden swap the laptops and he never knew it went anywhere? Did Hunter Biden actually drop this thing off? Was he really that stupid? Well, he's a druggie, so there is that possibility. But you've got this layer. Now, the next thing is, you know, again, Hunter Biden in bed with a crack pipe in his mouth is not something you hand over to the FBI. So what does this tell us? This tells us that something far more dark was on this computer. I mean, you don't hand, you know, a incriminating pictures. If somebody gets you take your computer down to get it fixed, and they look on there and you've got videos of yourself doing weird sex stuff, but legal sex stuff, they're not going to hand that over to the FBI. They may look at it and be like, God, what a freak. But they're not. There is a certain level of thing that they're going to have. They, in other words, hell, let's just cut to the chase here. If they look on the computer and they find kiddie porn on there or worse, videos of you partaking in illegal activity beyond drug use, they're going to contact the FBI. They have to. I mean, they're bound by law to do that. They can't sit there and find child porn on your computer and then just don't do anything about it. I mean, they're going to contact the FBI. That is going to happen. And so I think the fact that the FBI was contacted. Now, I saw another tidbit this morning before we started doing the show. And I've been reading through this stuff. There's a lot of things being put out there. I don't know how much of it's true or not. But supposedly an interview was done with this computer repair guy. When he went to the FBI and he was like, you know, what's the deal? You know, like he was nervous. And supposedly the FBI, what I read is the FBI told him, well, don't worry too much about it. Normally people that keep quiet, nothing happens to them. That is a really kind of a sinister response. And you know, that you would be like, hey, you've done a great job. We're going to get after this guy. But instead to be told, oh, don't worry, keep your mouth shut and you'll probably be OK. I really think that I think this is a potential big bomb that's getting ready to drop, something that the media is not going to be able to just ignore and keep screaming COVID over and over again. And when you put this in the context, and I'm not, you know, people have been following me for a long time and they know I'm not one of these QAnon people. I've made a lot of fun of it. But I do think it was interesting that at Trump's town hall meeting last night, they kept pushing him because the whole thing here lately has been white supremacists. But last night they kept pushing him to denounce the QAnon thing. And when they did that, they purposely framed it as debunk conspiracy theory that there are these global pedophiles. And they kept focusing on the QAnon with the pedophiles, basically linking it with the Pizzagate thing, you know, demanding that he denounce it. And he wouldn't do it. I mean, he refused to do it. He just kind of shrugged and was like, I don't even know what that is, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. I mean, this is just a hunch, and it may be another big nothing burger. But I've got this feeling, because Rudy Giuliani, if you don't know anything about Rudy Giuliani, besides he was mayor of New York, but before that he was a federal prosecutor, and he was known to being one of these really, really ruthless people. He's just somebody you don't want to get crossways with. I mean, his TV persona, he puts out in interviews, you just think he's another, you know, just like another politician, another guy. But I mean, the guy is he's just got a really ruthless reputation. And I think it's real funny that he's been out of the news cycle. It's like he disappeared. You didn't even know he was doing anything. And everybody's been focused on Bill Barr and he's not doing anything. And you've got all these things going on. And it looks like everybody, you know, the media is just continuing to squawk about COVID and look at this and look at that. And oh, the orange man's bad. And it seems to me that Rudy Giuliani's been quietly working in the background on a very extensive, let's just say, I think an extensive operation. And again, this is just guessing on my part. I don't have any concrete, nobody's slipping me secret files. But, you know, looking at the information that we're given here and the reaction to it, I there's a lot of smoke here, and I think a whole lot more is going on with this thing than what it looks like at first glance.
Well, especially if he's had it for a year and a half, if he's been silent and they've actually had this computer for a year and a half, and you certainly wouldn't be handing it over to the FBI just because it had a picture of him smoking a crack pipe on it. I mean, I was rather concerned. I was thinking, well, if it's on his hard drive, isn't that private? If you just handed the computer in to be repaired, you wouldn't expect the person that was repairing it to go looking around in your private files. I thought that reflected badly on this computer repair man. But surely it has to be something extremely serious for him to have handed it over to the FBI. There's talk about it containing emails which link Hunter and Joe Biden and this sacking of the prosecutor that was looking into Burisma Holdings over there in Ukraine, which they tried to impeach Donald Trump over this, and it's quite clearly it was corruption on the part of Joe Biden. And maybe there's more to do with that in there. I'm loath to think that it will contain child abuse. I just don't like to think of that going on. You hear of it, you hear of the Pizzagate thing, but it just seems so unlikely that the vice president would be involved in it. But then again, I mean, you've got Hunter Biden there, you've got him taking drugs, you've got him hanging out with these strippers, you've got him impregnating a stripper, having these wild orgies and wild parties. I mean, there may be something like that in there. There may be him with underage girls. We know this was going on with Epstein on Epstein's island. It's just we know that this is going to explode, that there's going to be a lot more to this than just these pictures of Hunter Biden on the front cover of the newspapers with this crack pipe. I mean, I couldn't believe that when I saw it. But and he really does seem to get his father into a lot of trouble, doesn't he? But then again, Joe Biden isn't very bright, and quite clearly, with his son, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Do you want to add anything else to this, Grandpa, before we finish up for the day?
Yeah, also worth noting here is the quote-unquote computer repairman. He didn't just hand it over to the FBI. He made backup files. He made backup files. That's what Giuliani has, and distributed these backup files to various media people. Once again, this is why I think a whole lot more is going on here than a computer repairman. And you're right, computer repair people don't generally snoop through your computer, but there are things that they're required to hand over, and specifically it's child porn. I mean, that's to be blunt, it's a very narrow thing. I mean, if a computer repair guy snoops through and sees where you have an email where you are setting up an arrangement to buy weed, they're not going to hand that over to the FBI. It just doesn't. It's a very narrow thing. And really the main thing that I know of off the top of my head, again, I don't claim to be an expert in these things, but off the top of my head, the very specific thing that they will hand over to the FBI, as they should, is if they find child porn on your computer. I mean, they're going to do that. This is how a lot of child porn cases have been busted, is these people go in, they get a virus on their computer, and they don't want to lose their stash of 1,000 kitty diddling videos. So they take it down to the computer repair shop because they think, well, it's private and he can't turn it in. But they're required. If you're a computer repair guy and you find this sort of thing on the computer, you don't turn it in and the FBI finds out later, guess what? You are going to be the one in a vice here. But I really do. I think this computer repair guy story is a way to put it out in the front, put this story front and center, to bring this story out into the public with a layer of protection of how did they actually get the computer. They're not going to be able to say, well, we got Hunter Biden's computer. We had a source that we slipped in there, and they swapped the laptop. Hunter never knew. You know, we basically downloaded everything off of his computer. I mean, they're not going to do that, because then that gets into, well, what kind of operation was taking place here? But there's a whole, this is a big spook type of operation. This, I don't believe the front story of, oh, we just took the computer into a repair shop. That is, it just doesn't seem logical to me. And then again, the backup file, again, even if the computer, this is legit, a computer repair guy finds these files, he hands them over to the FBI. He's not going to make backup files and send to these other people. That doesn't make sense. You wouldn't do that as a normal person in that situation. So I do think the computer repair guy thing is a front level to protect their sources of how they actually got their hands on this information. And the media is, of course, going there to do their best to ignore it. As you pointed out, social media is going to sit there and they're going to try to delete everything about it. But I think this is going to be, I don't know. It's just a hunch on my part. I may be totally wrong. But I think this is going to be a huge bomb that's fixing to drop, and I think it's going to extend beyond just simply Hunter Biden, the crackhead. I think this could be one of those real nukes that get dropped, but we'll have to just wait and see.
Well, I think you're right there. It does have all the hallmarks of being a huge spook operation, as you say, and it could well be Donald Trump getting his own back for the Russiagate hoax, which was another huge, great spook operation, illegal operation against the president while he was campaigning. So this could be him getting his own back on the Democrats. We will have to wait and see. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.